Good evening, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. As my part of Women's Voices, my intention to do what I can in the bringing forth of the sacred feminine continues, to illuminate how patriarchy has been perpetuated, as well as cast a light on our ancient and peaceful roots, is my goal. A global awakening seems to be happening regarding the sacred feminine, which has been absent from our culture since the advent of patriarchy. We have lived a rich and peace-filled history for most of our life on earth, living with knowledge of the earth and the seasons, living in harmony with the life around us, knowing life to be sacred, living without money or war. Peaceful modern humans first appeared in Africa and remained peaceful, without weapons, without war, until the cultural shift into a patriarchal power-over model of about 5,000 years ago. From Dark Mother, written by Lucia Birnbaum, harmony between humans and animals characterized ancient Africa, as did harmony between men and women, a contentment visible in many depictions in cave paintings, rock engravings, and other art of embracing couples. Seeing life as a spiral, Africans believed new life came from death. She continues, during the millennium before Jesus, continuing into the first 500 years thereafter, the major divinity of the Mediterranean world appears to have been Isis of Africa, Dark Mother of many names. Lucia writes, I find the Dark Mother's values, justice with compassion, equality and transformation in everyday and celebratory rituals of the world's subaltern cultures, and I suggest that these values are in the submerged memories of everyone. I think we all know what is good, what is right, what is just, what brings joy to our hearts. Consider that we humans have lived successfully without money or the concept of exchange for most of our 100,000 years on earth. Money, the exchange paradigm, is the cornerstones of patriarchal domination. The implications for a return to the land of the mother are astonishing and never-ending. Through the work of my guest this evening, Genevieve Vaughn, we begin to see how we have been blinded by prejudice and direct brainwashing to simply neither see nor value the gifts of the mother. Looking at our economy, our money, we would have to be blind to not see what a consuming phenomenon money is, the god of today. Any news, any newspaper, anything dealing with anything, food, water, etc., is all about money. One can begin to glimpse the vast implications of Genevieve's radical work. It represents knocking out the underpinnings of patriarchy and ushering in an utterly new way of being in the world. It is a mother's way. No wonder patriarchy doesn't want this idea to get out of the bag. Their house of cards would collapse in on itself. Actually, if they only knew, they too would be just as happy as everyone else to return to a more loving and kinder world. Genevieve Vaughn is an independent researcher born in Texas who presently lives in Italy and who has given vast amounts of money away to women to further the work of social change. She has been working on the theory of a maternal gift economy as an alternative to patriarchal capitalism for many years. She is the author of Forgiving, a Feminist Criticism of Exchange, and two edited books, Athanor, The Gift, Dono, A Feminist Analysis, and Women and the Gift Economy, A Radically Different Worldview is Possible. Her e-book, Homo Donans, two children's books, Mother Nature's Children and Free, Not Free. Her CD, Songs for the Tree of Life, and a film on her life, Giving, Forgiving, and her many articles are available free at her website, www.for-giving.com. Genevieve writes, gift-giving exchange exists in many places, but is made invisible by patriarchal capitalism. Two basic economic paradigms coexist in the world today. One is visible, the other invisible. One highly valued, the other undervalued. One is connected with men, the other with women. What we need to do is validate the one connected with women, causing a basic shift in the values by which we direct our lives and policies. The gift paradigm, she writes, has the advantage of restoring mothering to its rightful place in the constitution of the human. What has been wrongly proposed in the construction of gender, with devastating effects such as the promotion of the values of dominance, competition, and hierarchy, which are non-nurturing values, can be countered by reintroducing gift-giving as a social value and interpretive key. Both male and female human beings are basically nurturers. One gender is not the binary opposite of the other. If we introduce the gift paradigm into our interpretation of the world, we will find our gift giver within, which will then be validated. And now from her beautiful CD, Songs for the Tree of Life, we will hear her, "We Are Walking in a Circle."
Janie, while we're waiting, I'd like to just say that the website is called www.gift-economy.com. But there is also a forgiving website, but it's the one for the book.
Thank you.
We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. We are loving one another. We are crossing the divide. We are walking with our mother and our sisters by our side. We're a circle in a spiral that's evolving towards the light. We're a bridge between the sunshine and the everlasting night. We are women of all nations. We are straight and we are gay, liberating generations at the dawn of a new day. We are dancing in a circle. We are dancing all around. We are dancing in a circle to create a higher ground. We're embracing one another as we're spinning round the sun. And we love Earth, our mother, and all creation. We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land, to create the promised land.
That's so beautiful. Such wonderful lyrics.
Thank you.
Welcome, Genevieve. At last you get to speak.
Oh, thank you so much, Janie, for having me.
You're most welcome. I'm delighted to have you, and I know our listening audience is too. You know, the first question I ask my guests is, how did your own mother influence you to become the woman that you are today?
My mother was, in a way, she was very strong. And in other ways, she was not able to overcome the anti-feminist things that were happening during her time. She died when I was 23, and she was only 51. And that was back in 1963. And she died on March the 7th. And that is the day before International Women's Day, March the 8th. And so I've always thought that was symbolic, because she didn't get a chance to be a feminist of this epoch. And I'm really sorry that she didn't, because she would have contributed, and it would have, in a way, she would have been embraced, I think, by the feminist movement. So she had a lot of, let's say, ethics. She wanted me to do things right. I learned that from her, that I'm maybe even too much always in the desire to do the right thing. Of course, I don't always, and then it's not so great for me personally to criticize myself. But I didn't think the same things were right that she thought were right, but I wanted to find out what was right. I wanted to find out what made the world work the way it does, and understand why there is exploitation and why there's so many horrible problems, and why we had money and other people didn't. So I tried to understand that, and then tried to see what I could do about it. And I think her desire that I should do the right thing transferred itself into me in that way.
Huh.
She did have very big influence on me, although we had a lot of fights and we didn't agree most of the time. My life has all taken place without her physical presence in it since 1963.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's too bad, because she didn't get to see her grandchildren. You know, she didn't get to participate in any of the things I've done. But I think she'd be proud of me at this time.
Well, yes, I'm sure she would have.
I never started using my money for social change until I was already like 42 or 3, and my father agreed. I mean, it was okay with him. I'm much more radical than she was or than he was.
You're living in a different time.
Yeah, but I moved away. I was away in school, and then I was living in Italy, and I had a whole lot of other influences on me other than happened in Corpus Christi, Texas, where I grew up, and where, you know, most of the people were very conservative. My aunt was a great supporter of Oliver North. She was a real conservative. My mother's sister. My mother was not quite that conservative, but they were all in that sort of wavelength. My own being radical and leftist and feminist altogether was a real break from what they thought.
And did that mostly come about from your living in Italy and your marriage?
Well, I guess certainly the Italian experience gave me a lot to think about, but I also was already pretty liberal in college. I think the experience of living fairly close to Mexico and going there and seeing the poverty on one side of the border and the wealth on the other certainly made me ask a lot of questions. Probably was traveling that opened my eyes a lot.
Are you an only child?
I have a brother who's more conservative than I am, but leaning in the right direction.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I know your husband was an influence in your awakening to the part that money has played in this patriarchal world.
No, I don't think that was his particular contribution.
I see.
I had wanted to use my money for social change before we got a divorce, which was in 1978. I had suggested it, but he didn't agree. When we got a divorce, then I was able to, as one guy I talked to back then said, I was able to liberate my money. I did have the advantage with him of going to a group which was trying to apply Marx's analysis of the commodity and money to language. And that we did the very first year I was married to him. And I was totally fascinated by the idea, and I've still been trying to do that ever since. I've been working, that's what I'm still working on now. He wrote a couple of books along those lines that were pretty well received in Italy, and people still talk some about them. I was really fascinated and started reading Marx and some things about philosophy and so forth. And after all of these many years, what I think is that all of Western philosophy is built on a denial of the mother. I would see the mother in language as well as in the economy. So we need a mothering economy, we need a mothering explanation of language, we need a mothering philosophy. What we need to do is, instead of trying to integrate into the capitalist system as women and feminists trying to make more money, we need to create a totally different system that's based on this denied mother that has existed now for these thousands of years. That is what I'm trying to do with my life. Although I didn't have my personal mother for many years, I have been thinking about mothering and mothers for all these years. And I think that the collective mother is what's going to save us. And we are all mothers, and men are too, basically, except that they have been taught that they weren't. So this is sort of the nutshell of...
Right. What brought you here today?
Yes.
It's a noble cause. It's a wonderful cause.
Well, it's necessary now because we're in such a bad situation environmentally and economically and psychologically, socially, morally, what have you, that we really have to think things differently. We have to really get outside the box, not just with one foot in and one foot out. We have to really understand what something has gone real wrong over thousands of years. There's been something wrong that we have never healed. We've never fixed it. And at this point, it's really gotten crucial. It's like a broken arm and finally, in the end, the bone is sticking out. You can't disguise it anymore or partially fix it. You have to see that it's really broken. So we have to go back and find and analyze and understand everything in a different way so that we'll know what to do. Otherwise, we keep repeating the same errors.
That's right. To talk about money at all, the idea of not having it, is so threatening.
Yeah. Well, I think there are all that are beginning to talk about money now. There are also alternative currencies, like the Let's system, people that are doing time banks, people that are trying to do philosophies of money that are different, like Bernard Lietar and Lynn Twist and people like that. But I still don't think they realize what a negative effect psychologically that money has on us. That's part of the whole patriarchal setup, where you have a dominant one that judges and decides and over the many. That's the same thing that we're doing with money in a more horizontal way. That is, money judges the value of things and it takes their place and is the mediator. And it dominates not only things, but people. So it is a patriarchal pattern that we've put onto a material plane, sort of horizontal material plane. So we re-stimulate the same problem over and over again. And we get addicted to it. So one of the things I try to do is to just analyze this psychological aspect of money that makes it so bad for us and fits into the way we form concepts and so forth. So I think people realize how bad it is for us. We would stop grasping at it as a possible way out. Even, I think, it's exchange. It's not just money. It's also exchange, that is, giving in order to get back an equivalent rather than giving directly to satisfy the need. There's the difference between those two logics or those two interactions that we don't usually see. We don't usually make that distinction, but there is a big difference between the two, and one leads to the market and the other leads to a caring economy. Right now, we have the two mixed up with each other in a hybrid way between exchange and gift giving. But we need to liberate the gift economy from the whole exchange economy and find other ways of supporting the family. We have to realize what the problems are. We have to realize exchange is not going to bring us to a better world.
Right. You wrote in The Gift, A Feminist Analysis, exchange puts the ego first and allows it to grow and develop in ways that emphasize me first, competitive and hierarchical behavior patterns. This ego, and this is so important, this ego is not an intrinsic part of the human being, but is a social product coming from the kinds of human interaction it is involved in. Think about the little child. The little child is happy to give. The little child is sweet, is helpful, is...
Yeah.
That's our natural way to be. So all of that goodness gets turned into this other kind of monster mentality that we live under.
Yeah, I think that actually the little child learns that from their mother or their caregiver because their mother is doing that towards them. Their mother is helping them. Their mother's feeding them and taking care of all of their needs. So a child who is helpful and happy to give has learned that from experience. And they have to have that experience because if not, they don't survive. So they're socialized through nurture and by nurture. And it's that that the exchange economy cancels and exploits. So all of us are born into a gift economy. We really have to be because children wouldn't survive without it. And then as we grow older, we have to adapt to this other patriarchal capitalist economy that we've invented, and our values have to change to be adequate in order to make a living in that society. And our mothers and fathers and other caregivers want us to do that because otherwise we won't survive. And so it's really very sad that we have this transformation from the economy that works, that we should be in, and that we should, as adults, we should be building on that instead of going into an economy that doesn't work and where we really remain good people in spite of ourselves is because we're being forced to become egotists by the economy and by the setup of it in order to survive in it. And it was like we're going onto an alien planet when we're in adolescence. Why? Adolescents are so angry because they're being taught something that's the opposite of what they learned.
What they feel inside.
And what they feel inside, too.
Yes.
Yeah, because all of that feeling comes up through the socialization into a gift economy, the way it ought to be.
Yes, I'm going to interrupt one second and say that this is KZYX, Women's Voices. I'm Janie Reisner. I'm here with my guest, Genevieve Vaughn. We're talking about the gift economy and her book, The Gift, A Feminist Analysis. Yeah, well, our birthright has been taken from us.
Right. And this whole mothering aspect has not been recognized. All of this work that women do, mainly women, men can do it, but they usually don't. All of that work is not recognized as part of the overall capitalist economy. And you know how they say if housework were recognized, it would add on 40% or something like that to the gross national product. But, of course, it's not. But look, that is a gift that women mostly are giving to the exchange economy as a whole. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, the exchange economy really floats on the gift economy and takes advantage of it. But I wanted to go back to what we were saying earlier about helpful children. There was an experiment done recently about children's helpfulness, and they got like 3-year-old children, and somebody would like drop a clothespin on the ground and say, "Oh, I can't reach the clothespin," and the children would usually go and pick up the clothespin and give it to the person. And so the group that was making this experiment decided that children were innately helpful. That is, they were born that way.
Mm-hmm.
They inherited it, but they didn't. Their mothers taught it to them. They learned it from having been nurtured themselves and having been helped. So it's like we want to say it's in our gene when actually it's not. I mean, some of it might be, but mostly it has been given to us by our own mother's work and nurturing and taking care of us. So we learn it and we imitate it. And that's, I think, why children are helpful, because they have been helped. It's like, to me, a very obvious sort of thing. And once you start explaining everything by heredity, then there's no place for mothers anymore. They don't think of what people are doing to take care of children. They just think that children inherit all of these capacities, like language, like thinking that language is all based on genetics. And instead, whatever the genetics may be, I believe that it comes really from the patterns of giving and receiving that children learn when they're very young. So that's, I want to say, there's the social side of it that we always have to put in there. We have to put the social side in, because otherwise there's no place for the mother. They don't have a
role.
They don't have a role. Yeah, they're not. It's like they didn't do anything.
Well, there's no way to check that out, is there?
Well, sure there is. I mean, of
you
course
can't
you
leave.
Can't
you can't
not nurture children.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
but there are ways of doing it, because now they have ways of experimenting with children to see what they pay attention to for longer, what their, now they say if their eyes are focused on something for longer, they're interested in it. If not, they're not. So they can sort of do a child psychology of the whole new kinds of ways of studying infants that looks at them as social from the beginning. What they inherit is their social capacity, their ability to interact, not language itself or not helpfulness itself, but just the ability to give and receive, to receive care and respond to it. And that is what they're calling altercentrism. That is the other tending, other oriented way that children are from the beginning. Because they used to say that children were little egotists and that they didn't understand other people and all of that from very early on.
Huh.
And they had to become socialized. Instead, now they say they are already social from the beginning, and it's then the specifics of the social that they get when they're mothered and respond to that.
Uh-huh. We certainly need to change what we're doing now, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to create an economy that is based on this social altercentrism rather than on the egotism that is in the exchange economy. I've been working on a book now for years about language as based on gift giving and receiving, and communication also as based on that. And I hope that by doing that, I'll show that is what we are, is homo donans, that is the giving and receiving being, rather than just homo sapiens, which is the knowing being. And I think that in indigenous societies and matriarchal societies, that's what happened.
Yep.
That's what people are doing in those societies. Still, they have created economies and social structures based on these maternal interactions rather than on domination. So, and on exchange. They're based on care. So, and care for the group also, as well as for the individual. That is our guide. That's the way, that's what's going to tell us where to go, is the experiment, the social experiments that have already been done by whole society that have shown that it's okay, you can live in a good way, a really good way, and to make a good culture on the basis of gift giving rather than exchange, and on the basis of maternal values.
I think of Barbara Alice Mann's book, The Iroquois Women, and how she described in the 1400s how they lived and how well it worked, and women pretty much ran it.
Yeah.
And they did it well. They did it very well. And their crops were beautiful, and they had amazing food stuff. They everything was neat and orderly and lovely, and everyone was attended to.
Yeah, because when you take care of children, you have to look at the need of the other, let's say. And then when you are taking care of a society, you also look at the need of the other. It's not based on profit. And so it's normal to satisfy the needs of everyone, in a society that's based on mothering rather than on a society that's based on patriarchy and domination and power, the one over the many. And it's just that we've gotten into a wrong model. We've accepted a wrong gender formation of men as not mothering, as not nurturing. And so they have to find something else to do, and they end up doing domination instead of nurturing. But that is not the way to be a human being. And our society is all based on that now. Yeah. If it's not on direct domination of one person over others, it's on economic domination of one person over others, or many people over others. So we have wrong value system that can be changed. And I think people, so many people are just into the cost-benefit analysis and quantitative reasoning about what we ought to do or not. And instead of the qualitative and the other-oriented, need-oriented way of doing things, which is the only way that's going to work. We're like so many billions of people on Earth now. We cannot all be ego-oriented. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. But it's hard for those guys in power to get that. I mean, everything is a commodity. Everything. Human beings as well.
I think all of that is very empty.
Oh, of course it is.
And that it doesn't really work. The meaning coming from power or domination is really not meaning. It does not satisfy the person that does it. In order to be satisfied by domination, you have to really distort yourself, and then then it's a kind of a malady.
And since you're never really satisfied, you keep going for more and more and more, like grasping, trying to find it.
Yeah, that's right.
And turn into some sort of monsters running the world.
Yeah, and the people that stay sane, let's say, what do? When they get a lot of money, they give it away. So they go into doing the gift economy when they have a lot. You know, we need to make this whole society not be that way, so that everybody can give and receive.
You said that there are a lot of, still, I know there are, matriarchal societies that by and large we don't hear about, know about. Could you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, there are. They're like the Moso in China, the Salish up in Canada and northern U.S., and the Khazi in northern India. There are a number of matriarchal or semi-matriarchal societies that have also gift practices still. But everybody, they're still being absorbed into capitalism, because as capitalism spreads and tries to take the gifts of everyone and tries to abolish the gift economy as an alternative model, because it works better, really. I mean, capitalism does not want to have to compete with gift giving. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why the European settlers destroyed the native peoples in the Americas as much as they did, and took their land and put them in boarding schools that would destroy their culture, because it's so much a better way to live in a gift economy than in a market economy. I mean, isn't it much better to have everybody have enough and devote themselves to celebrations and festivals instead of spending their lives slaving for somebody at the top and so that person can have more money?
Right.
I mean, it's just such a crazy system that we're in. In fact, the capitalism and the market economy is a parasite on the gift economy, and that is, profit is actually a gift that's given by force, but given by the worker to the capitalist through the surplus value, through that part of the work that's not paid for by the capitalist.
Right.
So, and the free work of women and the resources of the free, what they call unpriced resources of nature,
mm-hmm.
and all the what they call externalities of capitalist system, all of those contributions that come from outside and from inside are gifts that are being sucked up into the system and sucked away into the pockets of the few, but not only. They're also being wasted. All those gifts are being wasted on war. The trillions of dollars that have gone into the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are, it's just mind-boggling. What if we had not thrown away that money on destruction, right, and instead had done something constructive with it, we would have had abundance for everybody. But capitalism doesn't work with abundance. It needs to dominate, and so it needs to have most of the people have scarcity. So because otherwise it has no leverage. People, if they were not living in scarcity, they would not go work for the market. They would just have their own garden and their own community and live there in happiness. As it is, say, the powers that be don't understand that, and they're scared of the masses of people, and they want to control them, and they want to maintain this whole circulation of money away from the needs and towards the greed.
Yes. I'm interviewing, of course, Genevieve Vaughn, and I want to say a few words about her. Genevieve founded and directed the Foundation for a Compassionate Society from 1987 to 1998, an all-women activist foundation for social change, information which can also be found on her website. Which, would you mind giving that again, your website?
Yeah, it's www.gift-economy.com.
Thank you. On her website also are audio recordings of the presentations of many international women from the conference she organized, A Radically Different Worldview is Possible, The Gift Economy Inside and Outside Patriarchal Capitalism. This was in 2004. And the Second World Congress of Matriarchal Studies in 2005, under the direction of Heidi Gottner-Abendroth. In 1992, Genevieve created a temple to this Egyptian goddess Sekhmet near the nuclear test site in the Nevada desert. The temple is still in existence and open to visitors. Genevieve is also the mother of three beautiful daughters. I'm going to read just a little bit more from your book.
Okay. I wanted to add that we also had there was a conference in Toronto with Association for Research on Mothering. And our conference then was called A Mother World is Possible. And all the videos of that are also there. And other conferences, too, that we've done. So there's a lot of video material.
That's wonderful. And you get an opportunity to hear women from all around the world speaking on various and important subjects.
Well, mostly on the gift economy or on matriarchy.
Yes, so that's a wonderful gift. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
You write, money is key in keeping the masses poor and the rich in power. You write, the market is not just a benign way of moving goods from one place to another. It is a self-perpetuating and self-aggrandizing human logical mechanism for grasping unilateral gifts and determining their destination. The top 2% of the world adult population, must be 1% now, owns more than 50% of the physical and financial resources of the world, while the bottom 50% owns just 1%. So that brings us back to your favorite topic.
I think that we've really gotten into this mechanism that we don't realize is actually operating all the time. Whenever we do our simple day-to-day buying and selling, and even when we're doing lots of other kinds of things like watching ads on TV or numerous other parts of our lives, they're all turned towards this mechanism of the market. And really, it's not just capitalism. It's also the market itself that shifts our activity away from gift-giving and towards exchange, because the gift-giving makes us look directly at the other person and see what their needs are and try to do something to satisfy those needs, so our own actions are modulated or around those needs. And it makes us more other-oriented to satisfy needs directly instead of to give in order to get back an equivalent. Because the giving in order to get back an equivalent is ego-oriented, and it's based on this equivalence between my goods and your goods, and not on the needs that our actions and our products are going to satisfy. So there's really no transfer between me and you when I exchange with you, because that is made in order to for me to get something back. So the transfer is contradicted in mid-flight, let's say.
Right. There's no gift.
There's no gift, and so there it's not other-oriented anymore, and it's stopped in the middle, and where gifts circulate, one person that gives to another who gives to another, and that can create community as the gifts circulate and go around. In exchange, they call it circulation, but it's really not. Each one gives to themselves, and so the gift is stopped. It's in between. And this, I think the logic of this has a strong effect on our psychology, and that's one reason why we really shouldn't be doing exchange. We should be trying to do much more gift giving, and people do a lot of it. I mean, they do it in volunteer things, they do it in taking care of each other, they do it in breathing in and breathing out. Everything really is based on the cycles of gift, and we're putting a monkey wrench in the work by putting in exchange in the middle. And we need to get out of that, and we can think it through, and we can stop doing exchange. And I think that for our and especially exchange for money, because money is this dominant one that decides on what the values are of everything, and it is a sort of a norm or a standard that we don't need. We need a giving standard. We need a compassionate standard, and not an abstract standard of value. And so we need to change our ways of doing things and rethink it all on the basis of this mothering economy or gift giving directly to needs, and how we can build on that economy a more general one that works for everybody. And that's the premise, is gift giving. That's the first premise, the unilateral gift. Unilateral gift, which then is passed on, and the next person gives more again, and the next person gives again, and so everybody gets nurtured. But if you believe that exchange is at the beginning, you never can get back to the gift. Basically, the gift seems only like some little add-on to the market, rather than being the foundation of everything. And so that's my partial tirade against the market and money.
Yes.
I think we have gotten just a wrong idea and a big illusion, thinking that the market is the solution. Instead, it's not, and it has pushed us into a lot of patriarchal dominance too, which we have spread everywhere as the white capitalist European economy has taken over everything and sort of blotted out all the alternatives, and particularly the alternatives based on mothering.
Absolutely. The way I think about it is that as a mother, I don't charge my children. I don't try to exchange. The mother doesn't do that. I mean, that's just, it comes from the heart rather than trying to be sure that everybody puts their equal part in.
Yeah, you have to satisfy the needs. Little children can't exchange with you because when they're born, they can't give back an equivalent of what you've given to them. So there's no exchange that's possible, really. And they're dependent for quite a few years, and that's one of the things that humans have that's different from other animals, is this long period in which babies are so dependent. And but it's an advantage, because that dependence calls out the gift, and survival can't happen without the gift. So it's this gift economy in the beginning that is really the basis of our intelligence and our interactivity, and, as I say, also our language and communication. So we have thought wrongly that these were things that were either inherited or are learned by some learning capacities, but not by the model of the mother. So that is what I'm trying to put back into our thinking, is this model of the mother, this model of the gift that's so important. As we did, as I was saying, destroy so many indigenous peoples and economies, we've blotted out that model of the mother for ourselves as well. We need to take it back up, because we are now destroying the future generations. We're eliminating the abundance that they would have inherited from us. And so we're not going to be giving them anything, and they're not going to be able to give to their children or to each other, because we're depleting the world of the possibility of gift giving generally. And that is really a huge tragedy. But we don't need to do that, because, as I said, I think we are basically gift-giving beings. We've just gotten into the wrong mechanism. We're in a cage that we have to understand and dismantle.
We're on the edge. There's no time. We need to act now. The news is overwhelming. The effects from Fukushima are overwhelming. War, all of it.
That's right.
Life is being destroyed as we look at it.
Yeah.
And still, the beat goes on.
We have to begin to do more of the gift, value the gift much more than we do the exchange.
How do we do it?
A meeting the other night of university and town people. They were talking about the difference between humanities and science and so forth, and what careers were available, and maybe science careers were better. And we were asked to ask questions, and I said, in a world where you're going to have ocean death within 30 years, how can we think of scientific careers? How can we think of careers in humanities? We really cannot live as if we're business as usual. The main thing we all have to do now is fix this broken system, or change it. All the young people that are graduating from college now, what they're thinking of is, what kind of job can I get in this system? Well, that's not the question to ask anymore. The job is not, there are not any jobs, and the jobs are not going to get us where we need to go. So I think that some of the time what we need to do is to look reality in the face.
Absolutely. I am so grateful that you are saying this, and that it will go out to many ears, because I've thought it over and over again. What are we doing?
Yeah,
we need to stop it now.
We do, and we need to think of alternatives, and we need to start living alternatives as well. We need to start, for the alternative of the gift economy, we need to begin to recognize the gift giving we're already doing in our lives, and then make an effort to do more of it as we can. I don't mean to self-sacrifice, but we need to value the gifts to each other, and that we receive, and maybe try some of the gift projects that are out there, like the gifting circles that this man called Alpha Lowe started. There are a number of different ways of trying gift economy projects that don't necessarily make you have to go live in a gift community, although people can do that, and it's a good idea. But all of the different kinds of alternative social projects, like urban gardens, for example, all that is based on a desire to satisfy needs. And the desire for social change is also a desire to satisfy needs, to give a gift. So our whole society needs to be turned inside out like a sock. And we need to look at the gifts that are everywhere and promote those, rather than looking at the exchange that is everywhere and think that's all there is. Because the underside is all made of gifts, and it's already there. They are already there, not to mention the gifts of nature, which we need to realize need to be honored. But we have to be thankful now for the knowledge that's on the Internet and things like Wikipedia, which do make knowledge available to everybody. And so that, I think, and also knowledge production available to everybody, since people can all contribute to the Wikipedia. So the models are out there. It's just that we have not broken through the shell or the edge of the bubble to realize where we are to make these changes. I believe it's possible. You know, I think human beings are a wonderful species, that we have gotten into this trap that's turning us into a destructive species and a species that now is thinking of suicide. When people think we are so damaging, we're so destructive, we really ought to be extinct. We may be going to do that, but we shouldn't, because we're so actually... We're fantastic. I think it's a tragedy that we're kind of going off the cliff without realizing that we should save ourselves.
Well, yes, the gift of life. We have been gifted in an amazing way that we have life on this beautiful planet.
Absolutely.
We have much to live in gratitude is how it should be. That's how it was meant to be, I'm sure, in the days before patriarchy came into being. When we saw the gifts, and life was full of creativity and love. And, of course, those are all feminine mothering qualities.
Yeah.
And patriarchy doesn't want anything to do with them because they undermine their whole house of cards.
The house of cards is not satisfying on its own.
Well, no, it's not.
It needs gifts from everywhere. You also have to work politically and protest against the system as it is, and protest against this bubble that we're in. Protest against people's belief in the system that we're in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even if you're working in the system, you can still protest against it, and you can still understand where it's wrong and how it's wrong. You don't have to believe in it in order to get your daily bread from it.
Absolutely. That's so important. I think more and more, particularly women and men too, are speaking up. Chris Hedges, like Bill McKibben. And so they do speak up, and that's heartwarming. And I agree. I think more and more women, and I do think more and more older women, are stepping up and coming to the front. Because as I say and write, you know, we have the keys. We are the elders. We have the wisdom. And because of life.
That's right.
And mothering and grandmothering.
And we have done a lot of gift giving without recognizing what it was, right? Without recognizing that it's actually another economy and a mode of distribution of giving directly to needs. It's an alternative, and we didn't realize it even while we were in the midst of doing it.
Yeah, most women have given.
Yeah, they have, and men too. But what women, unfortunately, what it looks like from a view inside the system, it looks like that women ought to be paid more and, you know, have better careers and be more equal with men. But the fact is that the system itself is wrong. And the whole system ought to be based on women's gift giving. And that ought to be what is honored rather than exchange and equality with the patriarchy.
Because
the patriarchy is destroying everything along with the capitalist system itself.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So the answer is not equality with men. The answer is the maternal nurturing model as the model for a different economy, a different culture, where everyone's needs can be satisfied. And I want women, individual women, to have enough to eat and enjoy themselves and do whatever. But while we're making the money in the system, we have to oppose the system. We have to use our gifts to make gifts for everyone and to change that system into a different thing. It's changing anyway. It's going to have to change because it's falling apart. It's not only dangerous and damaging to everyone and to the Mother Earth, it's also non-functional. So it's not, even if we assimilate into the system and get a good job, it's not going to last. Because, like I said, how can you look for a career in science, maybe even in marine biology, when ocean death is right around the corner?
Yes, 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 yes. Wake up, wake up. This is so important.
Well, anyway, we need to be much more proactive. looking at gift giving, acting through gift giving, valuing it, and changing the values, our own values and those around us towards a gift economy and towards a nurturing culture and way of life. And that can work, really. It can work on the whole earth and make the earth really the paradise it was meant to be.
And once was.
And which matriarchal societies already lived in before and still lived in before we have destroyed them. And some of them have maintained that culture anyway in spite of it all. So the possibility is there. It's just we have to deeply disbelieve in our own system.
Thank you. That's a wonderful note. It's wonderful and important, and we need to constantly be speaking up and to protect the earth. This is it.
Yeah, and the species and ourselves and our species, too. We need to have a different definition of ourselves as gift-giving beings instead of as exchanging and dominant beings.
May it be so.
May it be so.
I know you continue to speak whenever and wherever. You were at Bioneers in California and on the East Coast this past year, and at Glastonbury.
I've spoken in Italy and Germany, and I'm going to go to England in about a month. And I am invited into various different places, and I go and speak, but mainly what I'm doing now is writing this book about language and gift-giving, mm-hmm. because I hope that through that we can see ourselves as a species based on gift-giving, because languages are supposedly species-specific trait, our characteristic, special characteristic as a species. And if that is based on gift-giving, it's very different than it is when we see it as just this abstract. We need to realize how important it is. This communication is really gift-giving.
Yes.
Giving, co-communication means, muni is gifts in Latin, so co-communication is giving gifts together. And community is based on that, too.
That's beautiful. Okay, thank you so much, Genevieve Vaughn. It's been wonderful speaking to you, as always.
Thank you, Janie. Thank you so much.
Yes, and I honor your work, and may it spread everywhere.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
And thank you for your work.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. We are loving one another.